Morning. Today's Daf and Shabbos, Nun Vav. We are on the very bottom of Nun Hei Amud Beis, where the last line. Between yesterday and today, we are seeing some of the more interesting Gemaras that try to balance the human condition, which tends to make mistakes. On the other hand, we're dealing with greats, with the historical greats, and we have to treat them with the kind of reverence and awe that they deserve. And it's a balancing act, and it's a difficult balancing act. And what we're watching is the Gemara is trying to perform this balance. They're human, they make mistakes, like you and I do. On the other hand, they arrived at a certain level of greatness. And so when the Torah gives us a very candid discussion of how they behaved, so how are we supposed to look at that? Are we take the Torah in its most literal sense, pshuto shel mikra? On the other hand, perhaps the Torah is just being somewhat hyperbolic. They did not do exactly what the Torah says. They made a mistake on a much lesser degree, but we're not to read the Torah literally. And this has been the raging debate that we've been discussing. We started the discussion yesterday, and we're continuing it, and it goes till the end of today's daf. And in fact, it goes to the end of the perek. Today is daf involved. It is going to be the last perek. I'm sorry, the last daf in the fifth perek of the Masechta. And so we're going to continue. Yesterday, so we dealt with Reuven, we dealt with Bnei Eli. Reuven, the Torah gives a description of him and his father's wife. And the question was, how are we supposed to understand that? Bnei Eli, so they acted inappropriately. We saw the Rashi yesterday, two things that the Navi describes. One is that they slept with women who were bringing karbanos, and two is that they were mevazeh bekachim. Rashi says for sure bizu bekachim. There's no rewriting history. That for sure is true. But in terms of the Navi's description of them sleeping with others' wives, we're talking about Eshes Ish. We're talking about Bnei Eli. So again, we discussed and debated yesterday how to deal with those psukim and what exactly did they do if in fact they didn't sleep with the women who came to the Mishkan. We are now on the very bottom of Nun Hei Amud Beis, and we're continuing. And it has been, and it will be for the rest of today. It's the same Baal Memra, meaning every time we introduce a new personality, it's Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman, Amar Rav Yonasan, Kol HaOmer. As now we are turning to the top of Nun Vav Amud Aleph, Bnei Shmuel Chatu Eino Ela Toeh. So if you tell me that the sons of Shmuel were Chote, so that's a mistake. Shenemar. Now the pasuk says Vayihi. Now the girsa of the pasuk is a little bit different than present in the Gemara. Ka'asher zaken Shmuel v'lo halchu banav bidrachav. So they didn't go. They didn't follow his father's ways. Now we're reading the pasuk really critically. Bidrachavu d'lo halchu michten amilochatu. Okay, it's true that they didn't. They weren't as great as Shmuel. Shmuel was on an extraordinarily high level, and it's true that his children didn't arrive at that level, but they didn't sin. Meaning there is a long divide. There's a major difference between not being Shmuel Hanavi and at the same time being a Chote. So the Navi seems to put them much closer to they weren't their father. Okay, so they weren't their father. So Elamani Mekayim Vayitu Acharei Abatsa. On the other hand, the Navi is extraordinarily critical about Bnei Shmuel. And it says that basically they were bribed, meaning they served as judges like their father did, but at the same time they accept bribes. Now, accepting bribery, that's a perversion of justice. That is a serious offense. And so what do you do with that pasuk? So the Gemara says, Shalom asu kamay saviyim. So what it means to say is that when they ran the justice system, so they didn't do it like their father. Now we know that when it comes to Shmuel, so he went from city to city, and he judged locally in every city. As Shmuel put all the expenditures out on himself, so the travel and the setting up the court, all that was on Shmuel. So v'halach mideshana, we're quoting the pasuk in the Navi. V'halach mideshana b'shana v'safa beis el. Va'gelgal, va'mitzvah, v'shafat et Yisrael. So we know that Shmuel went around location to location to judge, and that was unbelievable. The Haim. Now, as far as the sons are concerned, lo asu kein. That's not what they did. El Yeshu ba'areim. They sat in their cities. K'de laharbo schar lechazaneim ulasofreim. Now, what does that do? It creates a tremendous amount of bureaucracy. Because now, anytime a subpoena went out, anytime that there had to be something written down and sent, so now it created more paperwork, and more paperwork. Now, the truth of the matter is it did create jobs for people. But at the same time, however, it made it more onerous on the litigants. The litigants had to travel. The litigants had to pay for subpoenas being sent back and forth, and all file paperwork being sent back and forth. And okay, so this is the degree lower that the B'nai Shmuel were from their father. But that's all the Navi meant. Even though, again, the Navi writes it in a way which is really damning. The Navi says that they went after Batsa, they were bribed. Kitanai, another Gemara says, here we go again. Machlokes Tanayim. And that is, are we to take the Pasuk literally or something more similar to what we just described? So, Vayitu Acharei Abatsa. So again, we start off with the fact that the Navi itself is very clear that the sons of Shmuel took bribes. So, Rabbi Meir, Omer, Chalkam, Shalu, Bifiyem. So here we are now, basically gauging how to understand the Pasuk. So one way to understand it, Rabbi Meir, is that, look, they were Levim. As such, they were entitled to Meiser. And what did they do? They asked for the Meiser. Now, as a Levi, you're not allowed to do that. As a Levi, it has to be a Matana, it has to be a gift. And you're not allowed to ask for it. But as Rashi points out over here, what Rabbi Meir is doing is he's significantly softening the Avera. Rashi says it's bad to ask for the Meiser, but we're not talking about perversion of justice. It's a much softer Avera, according to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Malu Hitilu Al Balei Batim. Rabbi Yehuda says that it was Malai that they placed on Balei Batim. Rashi gives the following description. Rashi says that what B'nai Shmuel did is that they invested with various people. They provided capital. And a number of people took their money and did good with their money and capitalized. And so what would happen now is that their partners who would come to the courtroom in order to seek any kind of judgment. So it's human. What the B'nai Shmuel would do is that they would favor these people who were their partners. Okay. So now we're getting more serious because now we're talking about a perversion of justice. But at the same time, a little bit more understandable, but still, now we're getting more serious. Now we're talking about a real perversion of justice. Rabbi Kiva Omer Kupa Yisera Shal Meiser Not Lubizrawa. Rabbi Kiva is of the opinion that they took Meiser, they took additional Meiser, and they took it with force. Now Rashi over here offers two pshatim in terms of what does that mean? Not yet. They took Meiser with force. And then Rabbi Yossi Omer Matnos Not Lubizrawa. And according to Rabbi Yossi, they took the Matanos and they took it Bizrawa, they took it with force. Now, Rashi over here offers two pshat on what this means. One, Rashi says, Zor l'chai v'keva, v'heim lo ayu kohanim. Now, they took the matnos kohuna of Zor l'chai v'keva. We discussed it extensively at the end of Masechta Chulin, an entire parak dedicated to this topic. They took it, and they're Levium, and they're not entitled to it. Who gets the Zor l'chai v'keva? The kohanim get it. Okay, so we're talking now about taking something that you have no entitlement to take. And obviously, we're talking about that as something significantly serious. Rashi does offer another pshat as well. Matnos Levia, Kigon Meiser, Ukraksi, V'nasan L'Kohen, V'dashirin, V'loshi, Yitol Mi'atzmo. So this is a little, this Rashi second pshat is a little bit similar to that of Rav Meir, in that they took the Meiser, but obviously you're not allowed to take Meiser, it has to be given to you. Okay, but not like Rav Meir. Rav Meir is the softest of the Tanayim. Because according to Rav Meir, all they did was they asked for the Meiser, which you're not allowed to do, but as levels go, Rav Meir is the softest of them, and then Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Kiva are certainly much harsher versions of what exactly B'nai Eli did. We are up to our next major figure in Tanakh, and we're up to David. And the Gemara is going to be spending a good amount of time with David HaMelech, and we all know where the Gemara is headed to. Let's begin. So again, you say you make the mistake of saying that David did was terrible, it was a tremendous sin. So one is making a mistake. Shenamar. We know that Akash Baruch was together with David. Now, are you going to entertain the idea that David was such a major chote and Akash Baruch was with him? And it's true, by the way, that the pasuk that was just cited was before the chait. And it's true that you could make the argument that, yeah, Kadosh Baruch Hu was with David before the chait, but not after the chait. You could say all that, but the truth of the matter is that the Navi gives the indication that David continuously had Ashras Hashchina. And so the Gemara is assuming that this is a state that David was constantly in for his entire life. And so again, so the Gemara says, so don't tell me that then David was a chote. Elamani mekayim adu bazisa svar Hashem, lasosara. And then, of course, you had the confrontation between the Navi and David. The Navi goes over to David, and Navi says to David, you know, what you did was terrible. Now, I'm just going to quickly highlight and outline. I know we all know this, but quickly outline and highlight. So the David HaMelech was watching a woman bathing, and he was attracted to her. He took her into the palace, and he slept with her. And the fact is that at the time she was seemingly married, and so it was an issue. So what David HaMelech did is that first he invited her husband Uriah. By the way, her name was Bathsheba. I know we all know that. So he invited her husband Uriah back from the battle. Her husband was currently at the battle. So he invited her back at the battle in order so that Uriah could be with Bathsheba. So in the event that she was impregnated, so at least there's a possibility that Uriah now would be given the status of being the father. Uriah comes back, but Uriah says, look, it's not right. I shouldn't be back from the battlefield. I should be in the battlefield. I should be with the soldiers. We're right now in the middle of a battle. So at which point in time, David HaMelech says, fine, so go back to the battlefield. And as Uriah goes back to the battlefield, so David HaMelech sends with him a letter basically saying, send him to the front line so that when he goes to the front line, so he'll be killed. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. So Uriah was killed at the battlefield. And then David and Bathsheba end up do in fact getting married, and they have multiple children. Anyway, as I say it over, it sounds awful, obviously. And the Navi goes and speaks to David and is about to inform David. He goes about it through a mashal with a wealthy person and a poor person. The poor person has a kifsa, has a sheep, and has a ewe, and the wealthy person took it away from the poor person. Okay. So anyway, so here we are at the point now in the Navi where we are in the dialogue between the Navi and David HaMelech. And Madua Bazisa Zvar Hashem Asosara. You disgraced the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's the Navi talking to David. So as we're hearing this, now it's hard for us to understand, so how are you going to tell me that David was not a chote? So the Gemara says, Shebikesh La'asos V'lo'asa. So the Gemara says that really the truth of the matter is David wanted to be violating the Isser of Eishes Ish, but he didn't actually do it. Now, it's going to become a technical issue, and we're going to get into the technical part of it in just a moment. But what the Gemara is saying is that the intention of David was to do something even more serious than what he did. And he withheld and he abstained from doing the more serious action. All details will follow. Amar Rav, Rebbe Dasim David, Mahafek Vadarvish B'Zchusei, the David. Rav made the following statement that Rebbe, he was a descendant of David HaMelech, and as a result of that, so he was very kind in the way that he treated David, and he always looked to find favor in terms of the actions of David HaMelech. Now, this statement of Rav, obviously, it demands more of an explanation, because basically what Rav is saying is that Rebbe was partial because he was a descendant of David HaMelech. Now, we, the readers of the Gemara, we can read it cynically. On the other hand, we could just simply read it as a statement of fact, meaning that if anyone asks you about any of your ancestors, so anyone is going to be favorable about their ancestors, right? Ask me about my grandfather, my great-grandfather. Not that I know too much about my great-grandfather, but he asked me about them. And obviously, right, I am a direct descendant, and I'm going to speak about them favorably. And so it could just simply be a matter of fact. And I don't think it's necessary to read the Gemara with any kind of cynicism, although I understand that tendency, but I just think the Gemara is saying it as a matter of fact. Now here we go. We're going to go through the pesukim in the Navi. So we start with the pasuk that we already just went over. Madu bezisus var Hashem la'asosara. Okay, so why were you bozed at Kadosh Baruch Hu? You disgraced the word of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So Rabbi Omer Mishuna Ra'azem Mikol Ra'osha B'Torah. So this kind of ra, or this kind of bad, is different than all the other kinds of bads in the Torah. Shekol ra'osha b'Torah k'siv ba'va ya'as. Because other places in the Torah, you're going to see the word vayas, meaning it's not just that you did bad, but you did it. There was an actual commitment. So, v'kan ksiv la'asos. Over here, the verb, same verb, but conjugated as he wanted to do it. Shebikesh la'asos v'lo asa. Okay, so that's Rebbe's darshaning of the psukim. Et Uriah, now I think this is Rebbe continuing to darshan the psukim. Right? I think we're just going to go through a pasuk and we're going to see a drasha, and I think this is a hemshech, and this is Rebbe still giving his interpretation of these psukim. Et Uriah achiti hikisa b'cherev, and you killed Uriah. So this is the Navi talking to David HaMelech, and again now we're darshaning. Now the truth of the matter is that what you should have done is that you should have tried him in court. Meaning, what he was culpable, but you didn't try him, and you killed him without trial, and you shouldn't have tried him in a court. And his wife took you for yourself as a wife. And again, if you read the puzzle critically, it says that you took his wife, but the word likuchin means that it is a sanctioned marriage. Meaning that your marriage with her is in fact a legitimate marriage. And so again, what you did was wrong, but you in fact married Bathsheba. And here now we get into the technical aspects of it. How is it that David and Bathsheba's marriage is in fact a legitimate marriage? How is it that David's killing of Uriah was actually legitimized? How was all this possible? So the Gemara now is going to go through the technicals. So Rashmo Bar Nachmini says in the name of Rav Yonasan that anyone who goes out to war, so they write a get for their wife. Shenamar, now we're going to see a precedent for this in the Navi itself. So Yishai sending David out to the battlefield in order to see how the brothers are doing. So basically he sends them food to take to the brothers. Ask him about their well-being. And also, I want you to get from the brothers the Arov Tam. Now, that's a difficult word to translate. What does that mean? So, my Arov Tam, that's exactly the Gemara's question. Today, Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef explains. And, of course, it's Rav Yosef because whenever we deal with definitions of the Navi, we're going to see almost exclusively Rav Yosef on this topic. Dvarim amuravim beino levena. The Arov Tam is the things that connect him and her, meaning it's a get. Meaning that when the soldiers go out to the battlefield, they give their wives a get. Now, the reason why they do that is manifold. And Rashi goes through three different reasons why this would be the procedure in terms of a soldier going out to the battlefield. Mind you, by the way, this wouldn't work if the soldiers are going. That becomes now problematic because then if in fact the divorce is effectuated and he does end up coming back, so then he can't remarry her. But, okay, sorry. There wasn't the need for that here. So Rashi writes over here, Rashi, I'm reading the Rashi Shabikesh, Divrei HaMaskil Shabikesh. Rashi writes, Lishkav Ima, right, Lishkav Ima, Kodim Shekibla Get, Shaya La Sholech La Min HaMechama, Sheim Yamus Lo Tizakek Li Yibam. So Rashi says that if he dies, so there won't be a Yibam requirement. Now, Yibam on one hand is a mitzvah, but on the other hand, as we speak about time and again, it's incredibly awkward. Because it puts your widowed wife in a position where she is now required by the Torah to marry your brother. And, okay, on one hand it's the mitzvah, on the other hand, it's not the shidduch she wanted. And it's a shidduch min hashamayim, but it may not be the one she wanted. Okay, so it obviates, by giving her a get, it obviates the whole Yibam requirement. Two says, Rashi Hashemi Yaharig Ve'in Meid Alav. Also a soldier, Rachmanis, can be killed at the battlefield. And no one's testifying to his death, leaving his wife as an aguna. If she has a get, so then, again, that problem is going to be avoided as well. Oshem Yehei Shavui. The husband may be imprisoned, and he may be held captive for years. Now, again, it'd be laudable for the wife to wait, but at the same time, however, it puts her in a position where she also is stuck for the rest of her life. And so, for all these reasons, the get is written. Now we get to another very technical aspect of this discussion, and that is the following. When the get is written from the soldier to his wife, was the get effectuated immediately, or was it written on condition? So this is also going to be a discussion and a debate. And you can see it right here in the daf. You can take a look at Tosfos, third Tosfos down on the Amud, Get Krisus Kosev Lishto, Peres Rashi Al Tanai. So he quotes Rashi and he says that the Get was written on condition. She'im Yamus B'Machamah Tehim Agoreshes, Me'achshav. That the condition is that if I die in the battlefield, the Get will be effective going back retroactive to the time that it was written. And again, that resolves all the issues that we just described. Now, according to Rashi's pshat, it doesn't fit in so well with the Navi. Because as I just recapped the story, Uriah did in fact come back from the battlefield. He was summoned by David HaMelech, but he came back. And doesn't that mean now that the get was negated? So what Tosha says is in defense of Rashi, here's what you have to say. Afagav d'Uriah ba min ha-mochama tanai hayashim lo yeshuv b'sof ha-mochama. And so what you have to say in defense of Rashi is that in order for the get to be affected, to be activated, so it needs to be that you don't come back at the end of the war. And right now we're in mid-war, so therefore we're not activating the get, but by virtue of the fact that Uriah didn't come back at the end of the war, so now the get's been activated. Okay, that's Tosfos' citation of Rashi and his defense of Rashi. But if you drop down a couple more lines in Tosfos, he quotes the Rabbeinu Tam. And right, we've been seeing a lot of this lately. Rabbeinu Tam arguing on his grandfather. So Rabbeinu Tam says, no, that's not how it worked. The way the get was worked is that the husband wrote to his wife for a get, and they are divorced. And then, in the event that he returns, so they get remarried. And again, according to Rabbeinu Tam, it makes it difficult for the Kohen who's a soldier, but okay. The Vahadamin Bazaha Mutav Shival Adam and Tosos, I'm sorry, we can bypass that for now. Let's go back to the Gemara. So we have a very basic debate between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam in terms of how the get was crafted. Was it basically written al Tanai so that if he does return back from the war, so the get now is going to be retroactively negated, and if he doesn't go back, then the get is going to be retroactively activated? Or according to Rabbeinu Tam, the get was just simply a get. He wrote his wife a divorce document, and so they are now divorced. And hopefully he'll return back and they'll get remarried. That's the way Rabbeinu Tam understands it. Let's go back to the Gemara. So Beino Levena. We are two lines before the lines start getting wide again. Now this is again going back to the Navi, giving the tochacha to David HaMelech, and he says, and you know, you killed Uriah. Now you didn't kill him with your sword, so you used the sword of Ammon, meaning that they were in the battlefield against Ammon. Okay, but you killed him. So Macher bnei Ammon yata nena shalav af Uriah chiti yata nena shalav. So once again, here we are now in giving exposition to the idea that let's read the pasuk really critically in defense of David HaMelech. So just like if you were to have killed bnei Ammon, you wouldn't have been liable because we were going to battle against bnei Ammon, and they're one of the seven Canaanite nations. So just like you have no liability for killing Bnei Ammon, so just as well you have no liability for killing Uriah as well. So my time, so Uriah deserved to die. What did he do? So Mori b'machus hava. So he was a Mori b'machus. The Amrlei, because he said to David HaMelech, Adoni Yoav v'avdei Adoni al pnei asadeh chonim. So when David brought Uriah back and said to Uriah, okay, now go back home to your wife. So he says, I can't. In other words, my master Yoav, that was a general, and also all the other soldiers, are pnei asadeh chonim. They're on the battlefield. It's not appropriate for me to go to my wife right now. I should be with my co-soldiers. I should be fighting the battle. Now, where exactly do we see over here that he was moreid b'malchus, that he rebelled against the king? So Rashi over here has an interesting shot, and Rashi says, because when he described Yoav, he said, Adoni Yoav, my master Yoav. And he was talking to David HaMelech, and it's not the right way to speak, to call somebody else my master. That's Rashi's description of of Uriah being a Morid B'Malchus. Tosos, you can see Tosos, next Tosos, the Amar Leva Adoniyav, so he quotes Rashi, and he says it's really hard to imagine. That's Morid B'Malchus, that's rebelling against the king. Okay, so he misspoke, but that's hard to imagine that that's called Morid B'Malchus. Tosos offers a simple pshat. Tosfos says he just didn't comply with what the king told him to do, meaning the king told him to go back to his wife, and Uriah said, no, I'm not going to. Morid B'Malchus, just simply in the simplest context of our discussion, says Tosfos, is that he didn't do what the king told him to do. That's Tosfos' understanding of Morid B'Machlus. Continuing now in the Gemara, V'Adoni Yoav, sorry, we did that. Amar Rav, Ki Mayanta Bey B'David L'Mishkacha Bey Bar Medu'urya. So Rav made the following statement that if you are investigating into David's life, so you're going to see that the only thing that could be called any kind of a foible is going to be only the incident with Uriah. Dichsiv rak bedvar Uriah Chiti, because the Navi says that it was only regarding Uriah Chiti. That's the only stain, so to say, on David HaMelech's record. Abai Kashisha Rami Derava Derav. Now, Abai the elder, so he notes that, you know, I'm not sure if Rav is consistent on this matter. Mi Amar Rav Hachi, does Rav really say this? V'Amar Rav Kibal David Lashon Hara. So we have another stain, so to say, on David's record, and that he was Mekabel Lashon Hara Kasha. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. Meaning, we're in a bit of a bind in terms of Rav. On one hand, Rav said that the only stain on David HaMelech's record is Uriah Chiti, and on the other hand, there seems to be another incident which Rav himself seems to subscribe to, which is that David HaMelech accepted Lashon Hara, which we're going to go through the details of which in just a moment. In fact, we'll do it right now. Gufa. And the Gemara, by the way, doesn't resolve the steer between Rav and Rav. Gufa, the Gemara goes back. Rav, Amar Kibal David Lashon Hara. Dichziv, Ayomalo HaMelech, Eifohu. So we are now headed later into the Navi. And this is now in Shmuel Bet. And at this point in time, the Avshalom died, and Yohanan also was dead at this point in time, and David took care of the rebellion altogether. And what he was looking for, he was looking for members of the family, and he wanted to wipe out the entire family, and not I'm sorry the he wanted to wipe out Shaul's family. He really wanted to squash the rebellion. And there was a son to Yohanan. Now, we're going to be introduced to him in just a moment. His name is Mephibosheth. He had an accident in childhood. He was lame for basically the entirety of his life. He couldn't walk. And so now what we're going to be describing over here is whether or not Mephibosheth was a loyalist to David HaMelech, or was he not a loyalist to David HaMelech. And there was some Lashon Hara spoken about Mephibosheth, that he was not a loyalist to David HaMelech. And the Lashon Hara comes to David HaMelech through a general by the name of Tziva. And we'll see in just a moment that Tziva had very clear ulterior motives why it is he spoke Lashon Hara about Mephibosheth. And so now, when David first heard the report, so he accepted the Lashon Hara. And the Gemara now is going to point out this serves as another stain on David HaMelech's record. So here we are now being thrown right into the Navi, right into the narrative, where David HaMelech says, where's Mephibosheth? And Tziva says, so hinehu beis mechir ben Amiel below Davar. Right? The gear says with a vav, not with an aleph, but either way, below Davar. So Mephibosheth says, sorry, let's do that again. Tziva says regarding Mephibosheth that this Mephibosheth, he's nobody. And Rashi over here says that the accusation was that he was not a Talmid Chacham. Right? Rashi writes, Eino Chacham B'Torah, V'hum Matz'o Melo Davar, V'Chacham B'Torah. He's empty. And that's why our Gemara's Girsa has it with an Aleph. He's empty. He doesn't know anything. So he's have no value. V'Ksiva Yishlach HaMach V'Kechem V'Beis Mechir Ben Amiel Melo Davar. And then when David HaMelech does in fact find Mephibosheth, he finds just the opposite, that he actually was a Talmud Chacham. And so, Michti Chazit Shakrahu. So now the Gemara itself comments and says, let's think about this for a moment. He sees that Tziva is a liar. So Ki Hadar Alshin Yilavei My Tami Kibla Minei. So then subsequently, Tziva has more bad things to say regarding Mephibosheth. And so now the Gemara says it's difficult to understand. David HaMelech now is going to listen to Tziva regarding Mephibosheth, when already the first report regarding Mephibosheth that he wasn't a Talmid Chacham, and in fact it turned out that he was a liar and he is a Talmid Chacham, so it makes David HaMelech's ability to receive the Lashon Hara, the second Lashon Hara, even more difficult for us to process. Dichsiv, and here we go now with our second round of Lashon Hara. Tziva now is speaking poorly about Mephibosheth. Vayomer Hamelech Ein Ve'aye Siva. So Ve'aye Ben Adonecha. So where exactly is Siva right now? Where can I find him? So Vayomer Siva Lamelech and Siva. I'm sorry. Where can I find Mephibosheth? Vayomer Siva Lamelech and Siva says to the king, Hine Yosef Yerushalayim. So he's sitting in Yerushalayim, Umanalan to keep Omine, and basically, sorry, Vigomer, Vikule. And basically what Siva says regarding Mephibosheth is that he has no loyalty to you. And he really is more on Team Shaul. And he should and you should do with him what you did with the entire family of Shaul. Now notably by the way over here, for us to remember that Mephibosheth was the son to Yehonasan, and Yehonasan and David were in fact the best of friends. So David would, in general, be sympathetic to Mephibosheth, and on top of that also, imagine, he was also lame. In other words, there were a lot of reasons to be sympathetic, but meanwhile, Siva said regarding Mephibosheth that he wasn't a loyalist. Now, how do I know that David HaMelech listened to Siva? Now, in terms of what to do with the entire Shaul estate and the Yehonasan estate, and what David HaMelech says to Siva is, you know what? I'm taking it away from them. The king has that kind of power. I'm taking away the estate from them, and I'm handing it over to you. And now we see that clearly Siva had a clear motivation to incriminate Mephibosheth, because now he had financial gain. He was going to get the estate of Shaul and Yonasan. So this is all according to Rav. So according to Rav, when David HaMelech hears the Lashon Hara that was speaking about Mephibosheth from Siva, so David HaMelech accepted the Lashon Hara. He was Mekabel Lashon Hara. Okay. Ushmuel Amar, lo kibel David Lashon Hara. And as far as Shmuel is concerned, he did not accept the Lashon Hara. Dvarim Hanikarim Chaza Bey. In fact, it was evident to David HaMelech that Mephibosheth was in fact loyal. How do I know that? Dichsiv, and here we're going to go through a lot of psukim in the Navi. Mephibosheth ben Shaul yarad hamelch lo asara glava lo asas famo vespegadav lo kibes. David HaMelech comes back from war, and he goes back to Yerushalayim, and he meets with Mephibosheth. Now Mephibosheth is at this point in time, so he was totally unkept, right? He didn't trim his mustache. His clothing wasn't laundered. Or he looked terrible. Uksiv. Now the pasuk goes on to say, vayhi ki ba Yerushalayim likras hamelch vayomer lo hamelch lama lo halachti mi Mephibosheth. So, and now the king is speaking to Mephibosheth, and he asks him point blank, you know, how come you didn't come with me? So Mephibosheth says that I was tricked. I was tricked by Tziva. Ki amar avdecha achavshali achamor ve'erkavala ve'elech es hamelech ki piseich avdecha. I made the suggestion that I should get on a donkey and ride. Ve'yiragel be'avdecha el adoni. And he spoke Lashon Hara to you about me. El Adonai HaMelech. Adonai HaMelech kamalach elokim. And meanwhile, as far as I'm concerned, the king, in other words, he's talking to the king right now. Adonai HaMelech kamalach elokim. You're like an angel. V'asa tovenecha. And as far as I'm concerned, whatever you do is good. V'yomol HaMelech lama tadaber od varecha. Amarti atav tziva techalkus asadev. And so David HaMelech says, I know I said that the entire property of Shaul and Yonasan is going to go to Tziva, but what now I'm designating is going to be divided between you and Tziva. And Mephibosheth says, I'm not interested. Meaning, as far as the properties are concerned, you gave it to Tziva, you keep it with Tziva. And by the way, there is a Rashi on the bottom of Amud Aleph, which I'm not going to go through, but I have it underlined. But I'm not going to go through. But Rashi spent some time trying to figure out how is it possible that David took the entire property, the entire estate, did give it over to Tziva, and now he's going to take it away from Tziva. Now, again, he's the king. He could do whatever he wants. But how is that possible? Rashi speaks about the fact that he didn't intentionally give it to Tziva. It was on condition. See the bottom Rashi for more discussion on that. Anyway, so Mephibosheth says, look, I don't even want the property. Meaning, you want to divide the property between me and Siva? I don't want any part of it. As long as I see you, I'm good. I don't need anything. So Amar lo ani amarti masai tava b'shalom. Va'ata osilikach. So, and Mephibosheth says, look, as far as I'm concerned, this is the Gemara now darshaning. Meaning the pasuk ended just a line earlier. Right? The pasuk ended b'shalom abeso. And now the Gemara is giving us more behind the narrative. And what Mephibosheth says to David HaMelech is, look, I just was happy that you came home. So, lo alecha yesh li taramos, ela al misha v'yecha b'shalom. So I have no problem with you, David HaMelech. Meaning, as far as we're concerned, I'm loyal to you and I'm fine with you. My problem is really with the one who brought you back in peace. And it seems to be that he's questioning HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mephibosheth. So, hainu dechsiv, uven yonasam miriv baal. Now, we are going to look at this even a little bit further in this idea that Mephibosheth was questioning HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He didn't understand the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in the Navi in Divrei HaYamim, when describing this Mephibosheth, so Uven Yonasan, the son of Yonasan, and it describes him as Meriv Baal. V'chi Meriv Baal Shmo V'halo Mephibosheth Shmo. Now, the Gemara itself asks, the Pesuk in Divrei HaYamim is calling him a name. It's a funny name. It's not his name. Calling him Meriv Baal. And we see this time and again. The Pesukim in Divrei HaYamim, when giving names to people, sometimes gives them more of a descriptive name than the actual name. His name is actually Mephibosheth, but in Pesukim in Divrei HaYamim calls him Meriv Baal. Why would it do that? So he basically is now quarreling with his creator, and so now he's a Baal Meriva. He's arguing. He's fighting. Va'amrlo, and the description about him is Natsa ba Natsa. All right, Natsa, the word Natsa means to fight, to quarrel. So he's somebody who fights, who is the descendant of somebody who fights. Natsa Hadamara. Now, him questioning and challenging the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that we just went through. Bar Natsa, and he comes from somebody who also, so to say, fights with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is a reference to his grandfather. Meaning, remember, Mephibosheth, the son of Yonasan, the son of Shaul. So we're now going back to Shaul. I know the Gemara makes it sound like we're talking about his father, but it's clear that the Gemara is making reference to his grandfather. Dichsiv, vayavo Shaul al ira malek vayirev banachal. So in the war, where Shaul goes to war against Amalek, so vayirev banachal. Now he is literally fighting in the valley. And the Gemara gives the drasha, and we see this drasha a couple times in Shas. Amar Rabbi Mani al iskei nachal. It was philosophically troubling to him that he was now instructed to go kill every member of Amalek. And he's trying to think to himself, wait one second. We have the whole parsha of the Egla Arufa. That's the reference of the Nachal. And in the parsha of the Egla Arufa, you have somebody who was killed and we don't know who the killer is, and we go through an entire process just because one person was killed. And we're not even sure he was killed. It looks like he was killed. And that is how sensitive the Torah is to one person. And now I'm supposed to wipe out an entire nation of people? And it didn't make sense to Shaul. And basically, he was challenged with this philosophically, hashkafically, and so to say, he went back and forth. And we see, by the way, that he didn't do what he was supposed to do, and he didn't kill the entire Amalek for this very reason. And so the fact that Mephibosheth was challenging the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the Gemara says it really connects to his grandfather, who also challenged his ways as well. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. And here the Gemara gives us a little more regarding David HaMelech and Mephibosheth. Now David made the offering that the estate of Shaul HaMelech will be divided between Siva and Mephibosheth. Now, as we already know, we saw the Pesukim, that really Mephibosheth rejected the offer. But the fact that David made the offer, just like David made this design plan that the estate was going to be divided, so Eretz Yisrael now is going to be divided, and that Malchi Yehuda will no longer be serving as the king of the entire Jewish people, but rather the Jewish people will be divided in two generations later. Rechavim, the son of Shlomo, now only was the melech of the southern part of Eretz Yisrael, but Yeravam and the north separated, divided, and we had a two-state Eretz Yisrael, the north and the south. And all this was as a result of, it goes back to David HaMelech. The Gemara finds its roots in David HaMelech making this division between the estate of Shaul. Meaning the Gemara is basically saying there should have been no division whatsoever. The entire thing should have gone over to Mephibosheth. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Amala lo kibol David lo shenhar lo nechluku machus beizavi velo abdi Yisrael v'dazar velo gilin amar tseinu. And Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, it doesn't stop. Meaning he really piles on in terms of this idea that David HaMelech really did poorly in terms of hearing the Lashon Hara regarding Mephibosheth. If David HaMelech did not accept the Lashon Hara that he heard regarding Mephibosheth, so then Malchus Beis David wouldn't have been divided, and Bnei Yisrael wouldn't be over to Avodah Zarah, and we would never have been exiled from the Jewish from the Jewish homeland. Okay, obviously that's extraordinarily critical. In a Gemara where we're looking to soften the criticism, Rav really piles on when it comes to the this idea of being Mekabel Lashon Hara. Adkan, that takes us to the end of David HaMelech. Obviously, a big piece of Gemara, but for obvious reasons, meaning there clearly is a lot. There's a lot to digest over there. We're continuing in the Gemara. Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Amar Rav Yonasan Kol Omer Shlomo Chata Einu Lachot Einu Alatoa. You say that Shlomo made a mistake, so you're a sinned. So you're a toa. You're making a mistake. Shenemar V'lo Yilavavo Shalemi Mashem Lokavavo David Aviv. Now again, when the Navi is being critical about Shlomo Melech, it says regarding him, he wasn't like his father. And again, the Gemara talks about this range. Kilavav David Avivu Delohava Mechta Namilochata. Meaning the Navi is clearly giving us the indication he just wasn't his father. But he wasn't. Don't put him all the way on the other side of the spectrum that he was a Chote. So Elamani Mekayim Vehile Zikna Shlomo Nashavituas Levavo. On the other hand, we do have another pasuk that we have to contend with. And it says that as Shlomo got older, so his wives took him. And basically got him to be over to Avodah Zarah. And right, just even saying that regarding Shlomo HaMelech is unbelievably uncomfortable. But that's what the Navi says. So the Gemara says, Ahu ke Rabbi Nassan, de Rabbi Nassan, Rami Ksiv. So the Gemara says, yeah, but here's what we'll do. We'll understand the way Rabbi Nassan did. Because Rabbi Nassan noted the discrepancy. Vayhile zikna Shlomo nashavitu aslavavav. Ve'aksiv kilvav David Aviv, kilvav David Aviv, hu delo hava mechtei, nami have mechtei. I'm sorry, lo hava, mechtei nami lo chatei. So what we just went through, meaning the imbalance between these two psukim, hachi kamar. So this is how Rabbi Nassim deals with it. Vayihile zikna Shlomo nashavitu aslavavo lalechas acharei lo macharim v'lo alach. That at the when Shlomo was older and his wives led him astray, so lalechas acharei lohim acharim, to go after other gods, to worship other gods, but he himself didn't go. In other words, they tried to distract him, and they tried to get him to commit avodah zarah. He wouldn't do it. V'aksiv, the pasuk says, yivne Shlomo bama lechmush kutz moav. Now, we do have psukim that say that Shlomo built altars to the avodah zarah. So the Gemara says, shebikesh lifnas v'lo bana. No, it just simply means that he was thinking about it, but he didn't do it. Meaning he was grappling with the idea, but he didn't do it. So the Gemara says, really, is that a fair way to interpret the Pesukim? Regarding Yoshua, the Pesuk says that Yoshua built the Mizbech. Shebikesh lifnos v'lo bana. So Ela debana. Clearly, in the context of the Pesukim over there regarding Yoshua, it means he built. So hachinami debana. We have to say the same thing over here. Shlomo built these altars to Avodah Zarah. Ela kiditanya, so the Gemara says, okay, we're going to work with the following braisa. Rabbi Yosi Omer, ve'esabamos asher al p'nei Yerushalayim, asher miyamin ha'har ha'mishcha, asher bana Shlomo melech Yisrael, la'ashterosh shekutz didunim. So we're describing these altars that were built for Avodah Zarah. And this pasuk is well into Malachim. We are already at the Malucha of Yoshiyahu. We're late into the Davidic dynasty of the first base of Mikdash. And Efshar Ba'asav Elo Biaram, Yoshafav Elo Biaram. Now, by the time we're at Yoshiyahu, there were good kings in the Davidic dynasty. There was Asa, there was Yoshafat. And they're the ones who are going to let these idolatrous altars just lay around. So Adshaba Yoshiyahu Biaram, V'alo Kol Avodah Zarah Shebarat Yisrael, Asa V'Yoshaf Biaram. Now we know that as part of what Asa and Yoshafat tried to do is that during their melucha, they try to wipe out Avodah Zarah. Ela mekish rishonim la'achronim. Ma'achronim la'asa. V'talab ahem la'shevach. Af rishonim lo'asu. V'talab ahem la'gnai. So sometimes you get a scribe for doing something. You also get a scribe for not doing something. And whether it works out to your benefit or works out as a gnai. So basically what the Gemara is suggesting is that as far as Shlomo HaMelech is concerned, he didn't build the altars, but at the same time, however, he didn't destroy them as well. And by virtue of the fact that he didn't destroy them, so the Navi speaks in this kind of very strong language that he built these offers, but it just these altars, but it just simply means that he didn't destroy them. That's really the understanding of the Pesukim. Now, again, we just keep going back to Pesukim that seem to indicate that Shlomo did bad in the eyes of God. But the Gemara says over here as well, here's how we understand the Pesuk. It simply means that, obviously, he was in a position where he can rebuke and reprimand his wives. He didn't do so by virtue of the fact that he didn't do so. So that's why the Navi speaks so critically about Shlomo HaMelech, because he was in a position to rebuke. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Noach Lo Also Tzadik Sheyeh Shamos LaDavar Acher Va'al Yichtov Bo Va'yasa Rabbi Nei Hashem. It would have been better for that Tzadik, for Shlomo HaMelech, where he would be serving Avodah Zarah, actually serving Avodah Zarah, than having it being written, being written in the Navi that he does bad Be'enei Hashem. Meaning the fact that it's written in this manner, it really hurts Shlomo. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel B'Shah Shenasa Shlomo's Bas Paro Ichnisu Lo Elef Minei Zemer. When Shlomo HaMelech married the daughter of Paro, she brought in 1,000 different types of instruments that were used in the servicing of Avodah Zarah. Va'amar lo kacho sin la Avodah Zarah plonis, v'kacho sin la Avodah Zarah plonis. And this is what we do this is the instrument we use for this Avodah Zarah, and this one specific to that Avodah Zarah. V'lo michaba. Now Shlomo HaMelech did not give her the tochacha that obviously he should have, being now that she was a giyaris and she is living together with Shlomo HaMelech as one of the queens of Israel. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel B'Shal Shanaso Shlomo's is Bas Paro Yared Gavriel. At the time when Shlomo HaMelech married the daughter of Paro, so along comes the Malach Gavriel, V'Nazkana B'Yam, and he puts a reed into the ocean, V'Alalo Sirton, and it started growing and expanding, V'Alav Nivne Krak Gadol Sharomi, and this is where the city of Rome ends up being. In other words, the roots of Rome are all found within the actions of Shlomo HaMelech. B'masitzatan on the Braisa, we have it. Oso ayam shehichnis yiravam. Shnei egle zahav. Echa bebeis el ve'echad bedan. In a Braisa, the origins of Rome go back to Yeravam. Yeravam took an egle azav, two golden calves. Yeravam, as we just discussed moments earlier, was the one who divided the nation of Eretz Yisrael. And he took over the northern section in order to prevent the Jewish people from being Ola L'Regol three times a year to Yerushalayim. So he set up his own Avodah Zarah, and he did so by putting two Agalim, one in Beis El and the other one up north in Dan. So Nivnet Srif Echad V'Zui Tal Yishol Yishol Yavan. And it was at that point in time there was a little hut that ends up growing, developing, and that becomes the Italia Shel Yavan, an interesting term describing the Greeks, the Italians, right? The Italia Shel Yavan. So again, the origins of the Greek nation go back to Yeravam. Okay, and that is regarding Shlomo HaMelech. And we have one more figure, one more personality, and that is Yoshiyahu. Amar Rav Shmuel Ben Achmini, Amar Rav Yonasan Kol Amar Yoshiyahu Chata Eino El Toah. Now, anyone who has anything critical to say regarding Yoshiyahu is making a mistake. Shenema v'yasa yashar b'nei Hashem. V'yelech b'chol derech David aviv. Yoshiyahu did everything in the manner of which his father, not his father, but his ancestor, David HaMelech did. Elamani mekayim v'chamo lo ayah lefanav melech asher shav. So, and meanwhile, what are we going to do? In which the Pasuk says that there was no other king who was a greater Baal Tshuva than that of Yoshiyahu. Now, describing him as a Baal Tshuva means, of course, that on one hand, it is extraordinarily laudable that he was a Baal Tshuva, but that also means that he was a Chote. So the Gemara says, Shekol Dain Shadam Mi Ben Shmona Vat Shmona Esrei Hechzir Lahem. And what it means to say is as follows. It means that any judgment that he judged between the ages of 8 and 18, so Hechzir Lahem, so he returned it. And the Gemara over here is making reference to the fact that he was just simply unaware of what the Torah said from ages 8 to 18. It was only at 18 years of age was the Sefer Torah found, the Sefer Torah was explained to him, and he knew right from wrong. So at that point in time, he then went back and reversed all of his earlier judgments. Now, as Yoshiyahu now is reversing many of his earlier rulings, and I know it's hard to grasp the idea that he's sitting in judgment at 8 years of age, 10 years of age, even 13 years of age. It's hard to understand. But anyway, the Gemara says that that, and maybe he'll say that, look, he goes back to the litigants years later and he says, look, I'm really sorry, but what I ruled years earlier was wrong. And so the money should go back. But the Gemara says that's not what he did. What he did is he gave out of his own pocket. In other words, so in order to reverse the ruling, and money was owed now to the aggrieved party, so he took out of his own pocket in order to pay. And so therefore he didn't go to the other litigant and he didn't take the money back from him. Okay. The Gemara notes that this is not consistent with Rav. Rav says that Yoshiyahu is to be understood literally. He was in fact a Baal Tshuva, meaning he was a Chote, but then he becomes a Baal Tshuva. And according to Rav, that's a simple way to understand Yoshiyahu. And obviously Rav will not be in perfect alignment with Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, who does not understand the Pesukim literally. So the Echa B'Doreinu. Now, Rav points out that there's someone in our generation who also is a tremendous Baal Tshuva. Umanu. So the Gemara says, and who is it? Abba Avua de Rabbi Yirmiyah. Bar Abba va'amrila acha achua de Abba Avua de Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba. The Gemara has different gersos exactly who he was identifying as being a tremendous Baal Tshuva. The Amamar Rabbi Abba va'acha ache havu. We have a tradition that Rabbi Abba and Acha were in fact brothers. Amar Rav Yosef Ode Echad Bedarenu. Rav Yosef points to another person who was a tremendous Baal Tshuva, and that is Ukvan Bar Nachmeni, Reish Galusa, Vahainu Nasan de Tzitzisa. And the Gemara points out that Nasan Tzitzisa, Amar Rav Yosef Havi Yasibna Bepirka. Rav Yosef says that I was in Shir, Vavakam in Namnaim. And just, you know, we were learning late into night, and I just dozed off for a little bit. V'chazeh b'chom, and I saw in a dream, dekapash yada v'kibble, that Kadosh Baruch Hu was mekabel the tshuva that he did, meaning he was a serious chote, but he was also a serious baal tshuva. And Kadosh Baruch Hu accepted the tshuva. The tzitzusa, our Rashi describes, as basically the tzitzis shebarosho, the hair coming off the head, and basically he pulled them back. In other words, he pulled them out. He was accepted as being a Baal Tshuva. Hadrach Bameh Behema, and that is the end of the fifth parak of Shabbos. So let's quickly recap our morning. In terms of a summary, it's actually a pretty simple and clear summary. We continued our discussion from yesterday in terms of various personalities in Tanakh, and how to understand the psukim that are critical of these personalities. And the range of positions is to understand the psukim literally, or no, to soften the understanding, and that the pasuk, although speaking in very harsh terms, is not really describing what they did, but is speaking in hyperbolic terms. We went over this morning, B'nai Shmuel, the sons of Shmuel, who at face value were accepting bribes when they judged. And the Gemara discusses a range of positions in terms of whether how literal to take that. We went through David HaMelech, his episode with Bathsheba and Uriah, and also another episode which I would suggest is not as popular, not as famous, as him being Mekabel Lashon Hara. And the Gemara does spend a lot of time with him being Mekabel Lashon Hara regarding Mephibosheth, and the Gemara actually, Rav, is extraordinarily critical about David HaMelech's accepting of the Lashon Hara. We moved on to the Amud Beis. We went to Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech seemingly was over to Avodah Zarah, but the Gemara says, but the way to understand that is that there was Avodah Zarah occurring in his house, but he himself, he didn't build an altar to Avodah Zarah. He himself didn't serve Avodah Zarah, but there was so much Avodah Zarah going around in his house, and he had the opportunity to give Tochacha, and he didn't. And we went through, Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu HaMelech, who was a king, the psukim describing as being a big Baal Tshuva. On the other hand, to say he's a Baal Tshuva is also saying that he was a Chote, and it was just a question of, do we understand that literally, that he was really a Baal Tshuva? The Gemara says, the other possibility is that the Baal Tshuva is that on many of the rulings that he ruled earlier in his life, so he reversed the rulings and he dipped into his own pocket in order to make good on the aggrieved party. Okay, so Ad Kan, that takes us to the end. Tomorrow, Mirz Hashem, we're going to be starting the sixth parak of Shabbos.